Welcome to Season 8, Episode 35 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Sunday, the 1st of November, and we're at OddCamp in Liverpool. We're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Alan, and with me in person is Martin.
Hello.
Mark.
Hello.
And Laura.
Hello.
This is a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Really strange.
This is the first time Martin's done an in-person recording.
It is. Yeah. I'm bound to get it wrong.
It's been a long time since we've done one.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we're doing it completely differently in a different place, in a different part of the
different
country.
Different equipment. You'll probably notice we sound quite a bit different to normal. That's because we've got a different audio setup. But yeah, hopefully it's still going to be good. And we're all a bit worse for wear because we've had a weekend's worth of OddCamp. Which we're going to be talking about a bit later on, possibly in next week's show.
Right, should we get on with it then?
Let's.
And now it's time for some news. So there's an official WhatsApp app now available on Firefox OS.
Ooh.
You can get it from the Firefox OS marketplace. Because Mozilla's apparently reached an agreement with WhatsApp.
Ooh, what kind of agreement?
An agreement that there will be a WhatsApp client on Firefox OS.
The kind of agreement that there hasn't yet been for Ubuntu.
Or up until now there hasn't been for Firefox either.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the moment they say that if anyone tries to implement a WhatsApp...
WhatsApp have said,
haven't they, if anyone tries to implement a client for Ubuntu, then they're going to be very unhappy. And
I don't know that they've publicly said that.
Oh, I thought they had.
No, I think it's any third party.
It's in general.
In general, right. And so now they have blessed a Firefox OS as a platform.
So it looks like they're using a Android runtime thing called Open Mobile that allows you to run Android apps on Firefox OS. So actually, that's... probably the more interesting, bigger piece of
that is very interesting
because it means that Firefox OS could run potentially hundreds or thousands of different Android apps.
Do you know if is this something which would be baked into Firefox OS, or is this a wrapper that the app uses?
I don't know. I don't know technically how it works. There's some details on the Open Mobile website. It's called ACL, Application Compatibility Layer.
Right.
And they say on their website, it enables Android apps to run on non-Android systems. ACL for Firefox OS is coming soon.
ACL, that sounds like... Well, no, it sounds like the same acronym for what Tizen uses.
Ah, that could be.
Yeah. I don't know if it is on Tizen, but yeah, they certainly do have Android apps.
Now, you've said before that you think that if Ubuntu was to... use something to run Android apps, you'd be shooting yourself in the foot because you don't think that that's a way of creating your own OS, like app ecosystem. So do you think this is a bad move?
I think it's a double-edged sword because it's different for Firefox OS because for Firefox OS, the platform is the web.
Yeah.
Right? And that's always still going to be there and people will still carry on making web apps. Mm. Will they still be carry on making web apps and put them in the Firefox OS marketplace is the question.
Right.
You know, or will they just say, well, we don't need to bother because there's the Android version. We'll just use that. So this is your escape clause. You don't have to worry about making a Firefox OS version or insert name of any other minor mobile platform.
Yeah.
You don't have to bother because the Android version may well work on them with this ACL thing. But the flip side is for platforms like Sailfish, like Ubuntu, like Tizen, will people make native apps for that platform if they know they don't have to bother? And therefore the ecosystem for that platform can't necessarily thrive, but also is dependent upon Google and Android still being there and this compatibility thing that needs to be updated whenever new versions of Android and APIs change and so on. So it's a real double-edged sword, and I'm not completely certain that it's either a good idea or a bad idea because there are benefits to both sides.
Right.
That's the way I feel anyway.
Next in the news, the European Parliament has passed a resolution for European member states to drop any criminal charges against Edward Snowden, grant him protection, and consequently prevent extradition or rendition by third parties in recognition of his status as a whistleblower and international human rights defender.
This is a big deal.
This is a really big deal.
And I had no idea they were planning on doing this. It just suddenly came out of the blue.
Yeah.
And it was by 4 votes.
Yeah.
What, 4 votes difference?
4 votes difference, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
285 to 281.
That's interesting.
Yes.
So what practically speaking, I mean, that's, you know, having an agreement, but practically speaking, does that mean, you know, potentially one country could say, let's let Snowden in, and then he gets on a plane from Russia to that whatever country, and he has a happy life in Europe?
Yes. Or not necessarily gets on a plane, because Europe borders with Russia, so he could just
walk across the border.
Across the border. Across the border.
Well, depending upon which country he is invited to reside in.
But yeah, that sounds like that could potentially be the case.
But does this mean that any European country can issue that invitation?
Or they're not allowed to extradite him anywhere.
Yeah, but so extradition, but extradition, like, you've got extraordinary rendition where people are taken out of a country in secret to another country where the law doesn't apply, or that law doesn't apply. So, you know, take them away to... I don't know, America's new friend, Cuba, and or wherever, and that makes this law a bit of a joke. You know, if they did that, but is he so high profile? You know, you probably wouldn't hear about it if it was some random spy or
Yes, now he's got a Twitter account. Everyone would notice if he suddenly disappeared off the internet.
Well, I'm sure they'd write a bot to just keep on. You'll never know. You'll never guess what I found out. Oh, it wasn't as big as you thought it might be. I'm just going to stop tweeting now because I've got nothing interesting left to say. Bye, everyone. But he did actually tweet in response to this. He just said, oh, it seems like the rumours are true. This is amazing.
Yeah.
I think he said it was game-changing.
Did they say who proposed the vault? Somebody surely must have done it.
Somebody must have. I have no idea.
No, I'm afraid I don't know that detail.
I didn't notice that.
Well, there's some links in the show notes. Maybe a listener can do some research and answer that question for us.
What's next, Martin?
Next up, Theresa May says that the contentious parts of the
web surveillance plan.
I know. It's fatigue. And this means that they're going to be not giving powers to go through people's browsing history and won't be requiring communication service providers from the UK to store third-party data.
For those of you listeners who don't know, Theresa May is the UK's Home Secretary. So she's in charge of deciding what intelligence services are allowed to do, among other things.
Mm-hmm. So she was talking about things like if someone goes missing, being able to look at their phone records in order to see, like, last phone calls they made or received. But then moving on from that, whether they used WhatsApp and who they contacted on WhatsApp, so that maybe, you know, if the person they were talking to was a kidnapper or something, they could go and, you know, find that person and have a route to try and get the person back. So it was, she was talking kind of at a high level about metadata, like getting metadata about who, but not necessarily about the content and the fact that you still need to have warrants to go and get the actual data. So that, but it's still somewhat worrying to me that she's in favour of, you know, reaching in and grabbing that metadata anyway.
And it still strikes me every time that there's a statement about this in response to concerns about them, like, wanting to ban encryption or whatever, is their response always seems to be along the line of, no, we don't want to ban encryption, we just want the effects of having banned encryption.
Right. So they just want to sit in the middle of your encrypted traffic and see what it is.
Yes.
Without breaking encryption.
Yes.
But they want to be able to see what the data is that's encrypted. Yeah. Mm. Right. Okay.
So they want to man in the middle the encryption. Is that the idea?
Well,
practically, that seems the only way.
It seems, from what they've described, that seems to be what they want to do. But they keep on saying, no, we understand encryption is important. We don't want to break or ban encryption.
Hmm.
We just need to be able to do this in extreme circumstances.
Okay.
But, yes, we'll see how it pans out. I mean, the laws to put this in place haven't actually been finalised yet, so we don't really know what they're saying that they want to do.
Mm. Moving on, the EFF have posted about a victory for users The Librarian of Congress renews and expands protections on fair use. What's this about, Mark?
Well, this is something I wasn't aware of. So the DMCA has...
DMCA?
The Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which, among other things, says that if something has digital rights management, even if you are legally allowed to use the content which is protected, you are not allowed to break the digital rights management on that content. So this could mean that, for example, if you've got a DRM-protected ebook and the text of that ebook is out of copyright, even though you are legally allowed to use that text, you wouldn't be allowed to break the DRM on that ebook in order to get access to that text. Now, there are exceptions to these rules, but in order to get an exception to the rule, there's a 3-year process whereby you have to basically put forward the exceptions you think there should be, and they can be argued and counter-argued, and they will be granted or not. And then you have to do it again. After 3 years, they expire and you have to do it again.
Wow.
So this process has just happened after a 3-year process, and the EFF have been lobbying for various things which should be legal to do. And among those this time, which are now legal to do, you are now allowed to break the DRM on car software, so that you can analyse what's going on. This is obviously very relevant. But some of the other things that were argued for at the same time as this was extending the right to break DRM on DVDs and Blu-rays, specifically to allow people to remix the video that's stored on them.
Right.
Because remixing the video, if it wasn't DRM encrypted, is okay under fair use. But technically impossible,
yes. And you have to circumvent the DRM in order to do it.
Yes.
And they're saying that now you can do that, or this is the start of the
conversation? That is an exception which is currently valid for the next 3 years and may be renewed after 3 years.
This is US law.
US law, yeah.
Hmm. But if you remix copyrighted material, you still can't publish it because of copyright infringement.
You can in the US.
They've got the right to parody.
Right. Oh, fair enough. Okay.
Good news, I guess.
They tout this as a victory, but they don't like this process. They think that the fact that you've got to do this every 3 years is appalling, basically. Because if they weren't there to do it, then after 3 years, then all of these rights would go, unless other people were there actively pursuing these rights.
It's a bizarre process.
It is.
Isn't it?
Mm. Moving on.
GNU Herd 0.7, GNU Mac 1.6, and GNU MIG 1.6 have been released.
Are these more recursive acronyms?
Oh, no. What is GNU Herd?
it's a kernel.
No, it's a microkernel.
Oh.
It might. Yeah.
Okay. It's software. which runs on a computing device. I'm just checking. It runs, but it's free software, and it's like an alternative to Linux, in the same way Linux is an alternative to Windows and OS 10, kind of.
Well, it's specifically an alternative to Linux in that it's a kernel. It would replace what...
It's a microkernel.
Yeah. It would replace what the Linux kernel does in a Unix-like system. So you would still have the GNU userland stuff on top of Herd.
Right.
But instead of having Linux underneath, it would be GNU/Herd.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, actually, wasn't Herd started in 1991?
Yes.
So a little bit before Linux. But it never really got the traction that Linux did, partly because it's hard making the kernel microkernel architected in the way that they've done.
Right.
And it didn't get mindshare, whereas Linux did. And some argue this is why Richard Stallman is bitter and twisted about it, because Linux, took off and GNU didn't. GNU Herd didn't. But it doesn't seem to even... I mean, this is a new release, and there are some worthy changes in there. But it doesn't seem like there's really a super active community around Herd.
Obviously an active community, not a sizable community.
Yeah, I mean, well, active in that if you look at the Git commits, there's a few Git commits there was a bunch in September and October, and then some in June, and a few more in May. It's not like a relentless stream, which, if you looked at the Linux kernel, is a relentless stream of patches coming from lots of different places. Mm. And I don't know if there's commercial people behind Herd or who want to push Herd. It doesn't feel like it.
Why is it needed?
Well, it was needed back then because there wasn't a free software kernel like Linux is. Yeah. But, you know, Linux came a couple of years later and then just took off and Herd has kind of been left in the dust. But some people still believe that technically Herd could be excellent and a great alternative and, you know, secure and fast and all the things you want from a kernel.
Some time ago, I was really interested in seeing Herd succeed because I think it's got a better architecture. But too much water has passed under the bridge now.
More than 20 years.
Yeah, and, you know, Linux and BSDs are established, mature. Herd is interesting, but I think too much time has gone by now and it's not mature enough in the time that's elapsed.
So you said you like the architecture. You said it could be.
That's the theory.
Good at stuff, but...
Well, just that nobody uses it. And it's hard to prove that.
Yeah.
I mean, on paper, it should be good. But or great,
yeah.
But it's hard to prove that when you know there's so few people working on it, and you know. But we will see. Moving on.
I think that's all the news we've got time for this week. Unless no. Okay.
Okay.
Now go and squeeze it in.
Okay, we'll squeeze it in. Twitch playing Pokemon was easy mode. Today, Twitch viewers have been invited to do something altogether more challenging. Install Arch Linux. Uh-huh. Using the same Twitch chat-driven concept as the collaborative Pokemon playthrough, anyone will be able to enter commands and control the installation process.
I have no idea what you were just talking about.
So Twitch is often used for gamers to broadcast what they're playing for other people to watch.
Oh, it's good.
That's Twitch. Twitch allows you to broadcast your game, and there's a chat box at the side where people can like chat to you while you're playing the game. Now there are people have written bots that listen to commands given in the chat and inject commands into the game. So people played Pokemon, and the people in the chat were voting. So people were saying press A, press A, press A, press A. And then the bot would go, okay, there's consensus, I should press A. So it presses A in the game.
Right? Okay, because Pokemon's not like time critical or anything.
Right. It could be, but it's not. And it could be used to play all kinds of games. But what they're doing now is they've got a machine that is blank and has an ISO image and they boot it and people inject commands and key presses into that machine via consensus in the chat. And watching it right now, it seems to be stuck at a boot screen where it's trying to boot from the hard drive. So they've actually got it to the point, I think, where, you know, they've got partway through the install process. But the thing is, people can vote for bad things. So
subvert the process.
Yeah, so there are lots of people saying, during the installer, press down, press down, press down, press down, and then there's consensus, and then press enter, and they press enter on the power off option or something, and then game over.
Yeah.
Or it's like some obscure language that very few people...
you'd be good at this.
Yeah. We were watching them trying to partition the hard disk, and they managed to type fdisk/dev/sda, and then it would open fdisk for them to do the partitioning, and then people would say, control-C, 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 and it would exit, and they then have to type it in again
or
press up and enter.
It's quite hilarious to watch. Like, you know, you kind of wish them, will them on, come on, you can do it, you can do it, and then, you know, consensus is press control C and it's jolly good fun. It's entertaining to watch if you like that kind of thing.
Well, as an Arch Linux TU, it's nice to see that people are learning how to install Arch Linux the right way. Even if they're trying to beat each other, prevent each other from actually succeeding.
And that's the end of the news.
Now it's time for some community news and events. So, by the time you're listening to this, UOS 1511 will have happened.
What's UOS?
We ask this every time. Yeah. Ubuntu Online Summit. It's the virtual meeting place where there's loads of sessions done over Hangouts and IRC where people discuss stuff around Ubuntu, and there's show and tell track. So it's not just like boring like meetings about things, you know, mm-hmm. planning. There's people turning up and demoing stuff.
And you'll go for a beer together. Oh, no, you can't.
No. So do you know what is going to will have happened this URS?
So the schedule, it's all on the website. If you go to summit.ubuntu.com, you get redirected. It was on over 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Mark Shuttleworth usually does an opening keynote and sets the tone and maybe makes some bold statements that you know, what we're going to do over a while. And then there's round tables, there's sessions about Snappy, sessions about developing apps. There's like tutorial sessions of how to develop your first app, planning sessions for some of the apps that are on the phone and in the on the desktop, some server stuff. There's some convergence related things. So, but the nice thing is that they are all done over Hangouts, so they're recorded and they go onto YouTube, and you can go back and watch them later.
So, although they run all day,
yeah,
you don't have to be in the right time zone all the time. Yeah. You can pick the ones you like, and if. Multiple tracks run at the same time, so if you miss one because you're participating in something else, you can go back and watch it after the fact.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah, it's good fun. Excellent. And that's it. I don't know where I was going with that. A blog post has just been posted by Sturmflut, who's one of the contributors to Ubuntu Phone.
Yes.
And he's one of the insiders, and he's posted a bit about the convergence stuff on the Nexus 4.
Ooh.
And how to get it working and what you need to attach and some troubleshooting stuff. And ooh. Yeah.
Convergence as in the full Docker phone and it.
Yeah, so he's taking loads of photos. It's quite good because he's got loads of photos, so you can actually see it in action. And it tells you how to set it all up. But it's basically, you know, in essence, a Nexus 4 plugged into a SlimPort adapter, plugged into a display with a keyboard and mouse. That's it. And,
cool.
Yeah, it shows how it works. And he's got a few more posts planned about more in-depth topics relating to convergence on that device.
If only I'd gone to Org Camp and seen somebody from Canonical demonstrating this in person.
Well, this is exactly... it's super, super well-timed because, yeah, at Org Camp, yeah, we did demo it, and it's nice that other people can see the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
And play with it themselves.
And also, I guess, can use these notes to go to their own meetups and local events and reproduce this.
Yes, that's a great idea, actually. Yeah, if you take it along to your Linux user group or whatever, like Hackspace. Free software, Hackspace, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Take along a Nexus 4 and a display and show it off.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And there's one event which was blogged about by David Planella from the community team at Canonical.
Uh-huh.
And it's an UbuCon summit happening next year, 21st to the 22nd of January in California, Pasadena. And it's hosted at Scale, the Southern California
Linux Expo.
Linux Expo, that's the... I never remember that last bit. It's hosted at Scale, right. So there will be loads of people already there for Scale, and the UbuCon's happening there, so there'll be loads of sessions and
so is this like an old UDS?
It's kind of invoking the kind of spirit of the old UDS.
Right.
But UDS is a different animal to the UbuCon, because UDS was very much about, you know, planning and you know, getting consensus about getting stuff done for the following cycle, whereas UbuCons have got a more user and developer focus, so users can come along and learn about stuff. There'll be like tracks,
conferencing.
Yeah, it's more conferencing and workshops and that kind of stuff.
Right.
I'm going, and a whole load of other people are going as well. So it'll be good. I've never been to Scale before, so I'm really looking forward to going to Scale and going to an Ubuntu real in person Ubuntu event.
Yes,
it's going to be good fun.
Cool.
And I think that's all of the community news and events.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh a little bit. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. Or you can leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
that's it for episode 35. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing Ogcamp.
Yes.
Reading your feedback and recovering. So, yes, we'll see you all next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.